Hi. So I'm Tycho Anderson. This is my colleague, Sebastian Dabdue, and we work. I don't know, is this, is that, I don't know, we'll see. Oh, did I bump it now? Oh, you turn, oh, that off. Okay. All right. So we work at Netflix on the multi-tenant container platform there. And I want to point out that the name for this is not in any way related to Jesse Frazelle's library breakout. In fact, I didn't realize that when I cooked up this name, that there was that namespace collision. And I think there's some thought that we will probably merge this into a Linux containers project soon-ish. So that disclaimer, this won't be, this particular name may not be that long-lived. So with that, I just kind of want to go into kind of a basic question. How many CPUs do you have? And this is a question that it seems very simple. You could call one function that would return an integer and tell you the answer. But as we'll see in a little bit, people have screwed it up in a large variety of ways. So the way that we do this today is typically with C groups. I'll go over some of the other interfaces in a bit. But if I just did like a, so I'm in this C group here. I've just created it. There's no limit right now. So anything tasked in this C group can run on any CPU. So there's no tasks in this C group right now. So what I'm going to do is put this shell in that C group. So now the things you'll see, the first PID there is the task, the shell, and the second one is cat. So now those tasks are in this C group, but there's still no restrictions. So I'm going to so now I've restricted this particular shell can only run tasks on CPU 0 and 1. So this is like every container engine that you talk to has a way to do this, and this is how they do it. The problem then is if that container itself, for example, suppose that you were running systemd in that container may create a sub-C group. So now I'm in some sub-C group, and in fact, the container engine will then grant the container the ability to manage C groups. So now I'm here, and I can see that I'm in a sub-C group, and I have CPU set that CPUs.effective. That tells me what things in this sub-C group can, what processes, I'm sorry, what processors they could run on. But if you look, if I look at the CPU set that CPUs file, which is the one that you use to control stuff with, that file's empty. So in particular, if you are a naive runtime, you might look at this file and say like, oh, hey, I can run on lots of CPUs. And the reality is you can't because there's this other file that ends in .effective that tells you here's what the sum total of all of the restrictions up the tree are. But you have to know to look at this right file. And this is only one of the whatever, four different interfaces we have. So there's the kernel has a command line you can use to do this. This is what ISIL CPUs is what people who really care about this stuff, like HPC people, use. The second one is, honestly, it's what libc's used to use. Then there's procstat, procCPUinfo. All of the sys and procfss are emulated by LXCFS. So in some container environments, you will get a view in procstat of the right thing, but in other container environments, you won't. And then on top of all of that, we also have the syscall sked-getAffinity, which gives you some combination of the above results, but does not, for example, contain ISIL CPUs. So If you know, based on all of these interfaces, how to answer this simple question of how many CPUs do I have, you can leave. And if you don't know, that's okay, because the whole point of this talk is that we're going to try and fix that for you. So what's missing from this? In particular, you can do stuff like CFS quotas. So you're not even really worried about the number of CPUs you have. You may be able to run on any CPU, but you may have like a very small shared quota. And so in large multi-tenant systems like we have at Netflix, we're trying to move away from assigning specific people to specific CPU sets, with the goal being that if there is a CPU that somebody can run on, somebody should be running on that CPU. So even the original question is not necessarily correct. So it's hard to answer. I'm just going to kind of give you an overview of all the funny stuff that we found. So TC Malik, if you use non-sequential CPU assignments, it will segfault. That's bad. The JVM's implementation, this is a bug that we filed. So it queries CPU set.cpus, not effective, which was the demo I showed you. If you just look at the wrong file, you'll get the wrong answer. The other thing is that we care about other resources besides CPU, so we also care about memory and other network things. And the problem is that this effective file is really nice for CPUs, but it doesn't exist for memory. So if you want to do it for memory, you have to walk the whole C group tree yourself, as opposed to doing what the kernel already knows. So answering this question is also kind of annoying for other resources that aren't the, you know, the most obvious one, which is CPUs. So what we would end up with in production is a two CPU job would allocate 384 gigs of heap, which is half of an R5, and then, you know, that's not very good. So this is kind of annoying. There's a longer explanation that one of my colleagues wrote about, you know, how to compute this correctly in the face of C groups, but again, doesn't it take into account ISIL CPUs or other things. So there's more bugs. So glibc used to use sysdevices system node, which is a sysfs file, and so we could with lxcfs mask that value, but then they switched to sked-get affinity, so now we can no longer do that. So the reason that it's important to think about what glibc does is lots of people use this sysconf, or if you use the nprox command line tool to do make-j nprox or whatever, that uses glibc, which uses sked-get affinity. So if you are restricting resources in a strange way, you may get the wrong answer and you'll spawn the wrong number of worker threads and you'll context switch into oblivion and get less work done. So one of the glibc maintainers pointed out that this particular problem should be solved by the kernel. That's a bug that he filed that I think nobody from the kernel side at Red Hat has ever looked at. Musil, for completeness, does the same thing. Sked-get affinity. So we also saw crashes in libuv reasoning about this incorrectly, which is Node.js, which is important because that's what serves Netflix.com. Even LXCFS, which was written by some of the people in this room, myself included, I guess maybe nobody else in this room now, but some of the people on the program committee for this containers thing wrote this code and it was wrong. We found a couple of bugs there. So this caused crashes in lots of places. That was also bad. So even the people who are supposed to know how to do this don't know how to do it. So they also, though, I mentioned this thing earlier about if you use shares in quota, you know, then you really get the wrong answer. LXCFS has a solution for this, which is kind of cool. It's called the CPU view feature. So there's a question about where should this computation live. One of the glibc developers said that it should live in the kernel, but the kernel people, you know, haven't really worried about this. They've continued to add interfaces for figuring this out. So, you know, one answer is it should live nowhere. We should just keep allocating large heaps and crashing stuff and whatever. Unfortunately, my boss doesn't like that answer. So the next thing is we should fix that in the container runtime. So this is the traditional way that we did with LXCFS. So you bind mount some file, like it's a fuse file system. It looks at, when you make a fuse file request, it looks at that process ID. It goes and looks in the C group tree for that process ID and then tells you, it lies to you, and it basically says, hey, there's this many CPUs online. So this is the traditional way. It worked for a very long time until libc started switching away from looking at proc and sysfs files and started using syscalls, which makes sense because parsing proc and sysfs is kind of annoying. So, you know, if there's a syscall that can do the thing, they want to use it, so that makes sense. The kernel people often will say this thing that's mechanism, not policy. So they will give you the mechanism to reason about the thing, and it's up to you to make a policy about how many threads or whatever you want to spawn. And so, in principle, they have given us the mechanism, because the mechanism is these 40 interfaces that are all can do very different things. And so if you look in all the right places, you can do it correctly. So in some sense, the kernel already did it. It's just sort of complicated. So yeah, there's lots of them. And the other thing is that there's a new patch series allowing eBPF to do scheduling. So right now, if you think about CFS and CFS quotas, CFS is hard-coded in the kernel, very well understood by lots of people. If you, the user, can load an eBPF program that will now decide which tasks to schedule, the algorithm for determining how many CPU equivalents this thing has is now dynamic and depends on the results of this eBPF program. So the kernel also can't tell you necessarily anymore. That's, I guess, the goal of our presentation here today, is to have this library exist in user space. So it's one place so that everybody can go and ask this question in one location. So it should have no dependencies, because Golang doesn't want to link against libc, but also, you know, runtimes generally don't want to include a lot of other stuff because they're supposed to be small, if you think about JVM or whatever. So it should also be correct. So correct in two senses. One is, you know, we should give you the right number of CPUs, so we should do the math correctly. And the other sense is we shouldn't do like terrible memory corruption or other things like that. So it should be safe in the programming language's execution model sense. And with that.
So what we're proposing is this library called libmicontained. And the idea is that it'll be a container-aware API that like calculates like what the resources you have. In this talk, we're mostly focusing on CPU count, and it'll be statically linked with the CABI, and we're writing it in Rust for safety guarantees. And the idea is that it's meant to be used by like language runtimes and applications instead of like trying to figure out which is the right interface for resources. And here's a link to our repo. So why do runtimes ask? and we hit all those bugs before. The idea is that they mostly do this to size their thread pools, and specifically like their GC threads. And they want to size their arenas and allocator threads as well. And how can this go wrong? To give kind of a maybe simplified example, let's say you have 10 containers on a host. And just to make the math easy, that host has 100 CPUs. And we assign each container 10% CPU quota. Oh. Did I touch it? Okay, all right, back. So again, 10 containers, 100 CPUs, 10% quota each. Now what happens is those runtimes in each container, they're all gonna see 100 CPUs, and they're gonna start 100 threads that they expect to do like a CPU's worth of work. So what happens, they eat through their quota right away, and you get a ton of starvation, right? GC pauses, everything starts spiking. So what should they do? Well, call our API. So what we have first is kind of your classic, this is a classic numCPU. So we're gonna call sked_get_affinity, and this takes into account CPU sets, affinity masks, online CPUs, like all this stuff. But our real value add is this recommended threads calculation. So this will take numCPUs and constrain it with like quota, for example, and compute. It's not a rocket science algorithm. It's basically just quota over period gets you like a number of like how many threads you should be running. This is what like systemd and LXCFS do. So it's like a well-known calculation. And so let's do that example again, but with recommended threads, right? We've got 10 containers. We've got our 100 CPU hosts with quota. Now each one is going to get, when they call recommended threads, they're going to get 10 CPUs. And problem solved. Forever. come on. So what have people done in the past, including ourselves? So every language runtime implements it themselves. Like they call it, you know, pass a container aware flag to JVM. But usually, as we've seen, they get it wrong, or sometimes. LXCFS does the right calculation, but it can only do the proc file system mounting. It doesn't do like doesn't take care of like sked-get affinity. So what we did at Netflix was we used LXCFS and then using seccomp would intercept this sked-get affinity to like do this calculation. So this is kind of our follow-up to say, we were like, there must be a better way to do this. And there's lib, which is in the LX project today, but it's not container aware. So that's actually let me go for. Oh, and then the next thing is I wanted to throw out some like some additional like issues we ran into, which is a lot of things assume like static like. A static resource size, right? But in kind of a container's world, and you can when you can do, you can like edit C groups like for a running process. We don't think that that's no longer a correct assumption, right? So like you're allowed to change C groups on a live process, and nothing seems to take that into account. So other things we're thinking about are like, what if thread pools were dynamically sized? They would periodically check like, hey, do I still have 10 CPUs, or now do I have 20? You can resize your thread pool that way. But that's not the way it works today. So that's future work, but more like food for thought. And that's it. Thank you.
For sure there's overhead, but the reality is like if you want to lie to people about the right answer to this question, like you have to do something, and so that's like the best stopgap. I think is there a less overheady way? Like the real solution, right, is for just applications to get it right, so they don't have to worry about it. And so that's sort of how we arrived at this particular solution, is what if people just actually knew how to do this correctly?
The overhead of getting it wrong is probably worse than this, right?
I'm not sure.
For example, in checkpoint store, we currently don't have this mechanism to essentially restore the limitation of my CPU series. And I was wondering whether
So checkpoint restore will do C groups, right? So like the majority of the way people do this is with C groups. So I think one problem could be is if you restored an application to a larger or a smaller number of CPUs than it originally had, today, like mayhem. So if you have a 100 CPU application, then you restore it onto a 2 CPU box, it's still going to think it has 100 CPUs. It's going to allocate 100 memory arenas for like one for each physical thread, so that it can do, you know, threadless locking to do memory allocations quickly and stuff. And so 98 of those 100 arenas will be wasted. So for you guys, if you want to dynamically change the CPU size, you have the same problem but actually on steroids, because you really want application runtimes to resize their thread pools, which is Sebastian's last point. For us, it's mostly like, just get it right the first time, please. Like, let's figure it out later. Other questions?
So you mentioned the second relation. Are you going to provide the code for this library to do it?
It's a good question. We should. Right now, our SecComp stuff is not open source, but there's no reason it could be. Somebody just has to like turn the crank to do the work.
So we have a library, that's great.
Just for the offline folks, yeah. It's, yeah.
Sorry. So we have a library, that's great. What's, is there any movement to actually get into our apps? Because my job is still sucks, and having a library isn't fixed.
That's a great, good question. So your question is sort of, what does the roadmap for this work look like? This is basically stop zero of, like, do people think this is a good idea? So it sounds like you think it is a good idea. It would be nice to have your collaboration. One of the questions I have for the LXC project leader is, are you interested in having this code in LXC? Because I'm thinking step two would be, we can centralize the code in a place where the container people like it. And then step three would be, as you say, go hat in hand to each runtime. And it probably involves submitting a pull request and then flying to the Golang conference and the JVM conference and the Node.js conference and the, it's going to be a long road. But what we have now is bad. So anyway, to point question two.
I mean, there are a few things. Obviously, we've gone to currently a project. I've done pathway situations, but I don't know if you've done Deep Resource.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Okay, so Deep Resource is a thing that exists right now that's been developed by our it would probably make sense to have something that's more generic that actually covers everyone's needs, and that hopefully is that. So I think it's a good place to have, like, we need to do something as a project, because like we already have things about that. We've got like CFS, we've got all of those things there that are already used by others. So that's a good place for it. And like, as I was talking with Taiko in the past about this, this is a long game. Like, it's something we've been wanting for about a decade, that nobody really did anything about, that we wanted to finally do something about, so that in another decade we can have started on how great everything is, instead of still having that problem. And there's gonna be need for integration in a bunch of different things. So and the obvious one initially are for things like languages, like especially the Go runtime, those kind of things that own spread rules and that kind of crap. Those definitely need this kind of information, because right now they're all trying to do it differently, they all do it wrong for different reasons. So that would make sense. But it can also go to any other tool, like, whether it's using top, if you have to look at your resource usage on your system. We've got that very common misconception in Linux these days that, load upgrade means something, which is really important, because once you put C groups in the mix, you can easily create a load of like 5,000 on a machine that's not loaded at all by just creating a C group that's got almost no resource allocated and then link that super busy. It's completely out of control, and right now none of the tooling has a good way to figure out what's actually going on. You can get some stuff from system, you can get some stuff from other places, but if you want the full picture, you can't. And if you need to implement your stuff, I'm getting really tired of every project passing text files. Like, it's just extremely out of control of what you really want.
So, sounds like the answer is yes, you're interested.
Yes.
Cool.
There's a question up there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go.
Yeah. Memory is actually worse than CPU.
I was coming to the place.
Yeah, so I would say I am certainly not opposed to this. I think this basically shouldn't live under some Netflix repo, because nobody will take us seriously. It's much better to live upstream, whether it's Linux containers or U2 Linux or whatever. The biggest thing is, I'm guessing that U2 Linux people aren't that into like Rust. So Rust is like a little bit of a weird thing, right? Because you want to convince people that stuff is safe, but also adding a Rust tool chain to your build time is kind of painful. So I don't know, I'd be happy to talk if, I don't know if you're... Yes, yeah, we should talk after this. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, where it lives is like, just, I don't want to make another talk in 10 years with this same number of bug reports on the top. Other questions? Cool. Thank you.